to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We have a part two today. Cheryl and I are excited about this because a co-author of a little project we're working on is with us today. Her name is Michelle Yule. And the little project that we are working on, and these things take time, but there's a group of us writers who are putting together stories of women worth knowing. We just wanted to get all these stories collected and in a book. So when we asked Michelle Yule to come on today, and this, as I said, is part two, it's because she really was fascinated with one of the women that she's adding to our book. And we just thought we had to hear about her right away. We couldn't wait till the book comes out.
That's right. And you know, I had read about Pandita Ramabha years ago, and her story is so fascinating. And her fortitude and her perseverance was just absolutely incredible. It's one of those stories that when you're reading it, you're like, really? I mean, it's just so incredible what she endured to share the gospel and as a believer. But we don't have her saved yet. We stopped before she's saved. She's had the influence of missionaries. She's brilliant. And we know that because she was able to memorize over 18,000 Sanskrit or scriptures from the Hindu religious books. And so this young woman is now a widow. She grew up, she got married to a lawyer, he died. Tradition would have had her throw herself on his coffin and be immolated along with him in his death. But by this, the British had already interfered with tradition and stopped the death of these young widows. And so the timing of all of this, of her marriage, of the death of her husband. And so now she's gone to England and she is studying with a Christian organization in England. And again, she's working on her eighth language, which is English. Michelle, before we go in this, I want to know, is her daughter with her in England?
Yes. Manorama.
Manorama.
Yes. Her daughter, Manorama, is traveling with her. So she's not only sailing on a wooden ship from Bombay to London, but she's got a 2.5-year-old with her.
Oh, goodness, boy. Yeah. And you know, I mean, picture. Yeah, if you think about this in the 1800s, right. They don't have the same sanitation systems that they do now on ships.
All of it. But here she is, a very educated woman. And
curious.
Highly regarded in her own country. But I can't wait to hear what happens when she gets to England and how she is viewed there and what opportunities are open for her there.
Yeah. So she gets to England in early 1883, and she was so impressed by the Sisters of Wattage, which sounds like a Protestant type of home, because they sponsored rescue homes for women, both in their community, but also in London. And she was overwhelmed by this. This is a quote from her. She said, "Here for the first time in my life, I came to know that something could be done to reclaim the so-called fallen women. I had never seen or heard of anything of the kind done for this class of women by the Hindus in my own country. I asked the sisters to tell me what it was that made the Christians care for and reclaim the fallen woman. One woman read to me the story of Christ meeting the Samaritan woman and his wonderful discourse on the nature of true worship. And she explained it to me, and she spoke of the infinite love of Christ for sinners. He didn't despise them, but came to save them." And that left a huge impression upon her, so much so that she and her daughter were baptized in September of that year. The next year, she secured a professorship of Sanskrit at a women's college nearby. And while she was there, she studied mathematics, science, and English literature. She'd hoped to study medicine because women in India needed female physicians, but her hearing wasn't good enough. And so she settled on becoming a teacher. Her own cousin, as it turned out, was at the Women's College of Philadelphia studying medicine with all of Cheryl's friends.
Yes, yes.
That is so interesting because, you know, I've probably highlighted three or four women on this podcast that all went to the Women's College of Philadelphia. And in my contribution, that's exactly where my contribution goes to college. That is fascinating. You know, I'm thinking about those Sisters of Wattage, and I'm thinking about that seemed to be a move of the spirit that was happening in England at that time, because you have someone like Josephine Butler, who is also opening homes for these women in order to rescue them. Because at that time in England, probably quite a bit like India, these other countries, a woman who was unmarried or who was a widow had no skills and was often forced to prostitution. And it wasn't that they wanted to be prostitutes, but they wanted to feed their children. And so they would be forced to this. And Josephine Butler started these homes to save these women, but so was the Salvation Army. This is the time of the Salvation Army. And most of the converts to the Salvation Army were girls and young women and older women who had been left to the streets. So there is just this move of the spirit. Yeah. And it sounds like these women from the Sisters of Wattage, and I remember Wattage because I'm thinking of light bulbs, and they're a light in a dark place.
We have several episodes on Josephine Butler. So look
she's one of my favorite.
Yep. Look in the directory and you can hear all about her.
Yeah, she was fascinating. But this is interesting that this is going on.
And, that it overlaps.
And what a draw this is to a brilliant Indian woman to Christ. The fact that Jesus receives women, and not only receives women, but he's transforming these women. And, you know, having come out of the caste system, to see these women elevated and given dignity and honor. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michelle, sorry, we're getting excited in this studio.
Well, no, we had talked earlier between us that the crossing goes crazy. And one of the women who really inspired her was the book written by Amanda Berry.
Is that right?
Oh, she was so inspired by, look, this is what the Christians do.
Okay, another episode for you to listen to.
Yeah, and Amanda Berry, again, was part of the holiness movement that you were talking about.
Yep, totally. She was said that she was impressed in the work of Western women who seemed to have one common aim, namely the good of their fellow being.
Ooh.
So this was such a contrast to what she was seeing in India and her own personal life. Mm-hmm. So there she was now in America, and she left Manorama in England with the Sisters of Wantage while she toured around. And she just wanted to spread these same ideas to the women of India. She felt that was really the only hope for the future. She was there for 3 years in North America, and she lectured, she visited schools everywhere. She was so fascinated by kindergarten. The thought that you could take young children and put them and start them in as an educational process that young. While she was there, she became a cause célèbre. And in Boston, they began to found organizations to support Ramabai, and they called it the Ramabai Association, hoping to fund educational programs to high caste child widows in India. She was just so honored that these women were willing to help with her people. She said, "I am fully aware of the great responsibility to try, trusting that God will raise up able workers to forward this cause." She just was, her whole life opened as she traveled through America and met other Christian women. While she was in the United States, here it is, Cheryl, she wrote her first book in English called The High Caste Hindu Woman. Now, remember, she was a high caste Hindu woman, and that's where her focus really was, because those were the women most likely to be able to be educated. An impoverished child, there was no one to help them. But then, you know, the idea is still trickling in the background, that kindergarten, maybe we could do something. And so women got behind her, and she raised about $25,000 now to start a school. But what's also interesting is that her Hindu scholar brain didn't turn off, because as she thought about it and reasoned within herself, she realized, or she suggested, that there was a mistranslated word in the Veda, because remember, she's got this encyclopedic knowledge, and she argued that Suti was the reason for so many women's immolating themselves because of the mistranslation that had what caused the death of so many women. It was an oral tradition concept. She pointed it out. Nobody cared, but she tried. Okay. But by then, 1889, when she finally returned to India, she just, she started, she just gave up reading books about the Bible and began reading the Bible itself.
Excellent.
There you go. Exactly. It's powerful.
When she read it herself with her own eyes, she was amazed by Jesus and what happened with his death on the cross. And then she said at that moment, she realized that God loved all people, including women.
So this is interesting. She, in England still, she was baptized, but then she's in Philadelphia or around the area.
Yeah.
And that's when the Holy Spirit clearly just really revealed God's love to her. She had to respond.
So in New Jersey, there's a place called Ocean Grove. And whenever you study anyone who's of substance, who spoke or kind of came on the radar, you'll find that woman or man, they spoke at Ocean Grove at some point.
Really?
And it was this holiness camp where all these people would come, and you can still go there. It's the only city, I believe, in the United States, it still has prohibition. The only city you can't drink in. And it's just so fascinating.
Wow.
I shared there. Brian shared there. We rented it out. We shared for people who had rented it out, a church that had rented it out. But they do rent out to Christian organizations. But you'll find around it these little huts that have these tent structures attached to them. So I would think, I think that is where I first heard of Pandita, because they have information. They do a lot with the CLC, the Christian Literature Crusade. And so they'll have those books. And I think that's where I first heard about Pandita. And I think she actually might have spoken there, but they would, that was one of the things they loved to do, was have international speakers who had come to Christ. It was huge.
Michelle's nodding her head.
Oh, no. Oswald Chambers was there, and somebody, Charles Kalman. And I actually spoke to someone at Ocean Grove a couple of years ago, and they were putting together information about their history because it's so rich. I mean, my word.
Yeah.
So rich.
Yeah. And, you know, she eventually wrote what she called testimony. She wrote her testimony, Pandita Ramabai. You can find it online. It's easy to read because it's simple. And she says, after reading about the love of God in 1 John, she wrote, how good, how indescribably good, what good news for a woman. For me, a woman born in India among Brahmins who had no hope for me and the like of me, the Bible declares that Christ did not receive this great salvation for a particular caste or sex. No caste, no sex, no word, and no man was to be depended upon to get salvation, this everlasting life.
Oof.
I'm going to find her section in heaven and say, preach it, Pandita, preach it.
And she did.
Wow.
So the first thing she did when she got back to Bombay was to open the Sharada Sadan, the home of wisdom. It was a non-sectarian school, and the local Hindus assumed that meant non-Christian, which was her intention. She wasn't intending to preach on any particular religion at all. She simply wanted women, girls, child widows, and orphans to have educational opportunities for the first time. I mean, who's going to argue with this? Let's get them educated. Well, anyway, if you're familiar with the problem. they were able to maintain their caste rules. She wasn't preaching a religion. You can come and have your caste rules. And everybody was a vegetarian. She was a vegetarian her whole life. She thought meat tasted horrible, and you can understand if you've only eaten vegetarian. But the curriculum was secular. She wanted them to be able to read. She was trying to train up women who could become doctors, teachers. She didn't, I mean, other than the doctors, she didn't have high goals, but she wanted them to be educated. There wasn't a problem at first. Everything was fine, except Pandita had a child to raise, and they got up every morning at 4 o'clock for an hour of devotions. And she would talk about the scriptures with her child. She would read scriptures. She needed to know who she was in Christ and to prepare for the day. Well, I mean, the students noticed that she was different. They could hear her reading and talking about Jesus to her child. So they started coming, and there weren't any problems until several wanted to be baptized. And then the Hindu community erupted. A local newspaper condemned her. Anonymous letters threatened her life. Mm. Her families were yanking child widows out of the school. And they were demanding she change her policy. You have to be a Hindu school. And she said, no, you can worship your own God. I'm only interested in the girls learning how to read and how to think and how to write. Why I am a Christian, why should I hide my light under a bushel? So they went on, but within 10 years, they had trained enough widows that several were teachers, 14 were teachers, 8 were nurses, there were a couple of housekeepers, and then, 10 were happily married. So it all worked out just fine. But out of the 350 students she had over the first 10 years, 48 became Christians, which for her was gratifying. Wasn't the point, but it was gratifying. But it's still, the neighborhoods were not very happy. So, but she knew that that wasn't the future. I mean, 35 students a year is a small amount, but there's a whole continent, right? And a subcontinent. So she, and the funding she had to set up the school was only for 10 years. So she started exploring other options and she thought, if I bought a farm out in the countryside, we could train them, we could live there, we could self-support, and then I wouldn't have to worry about finding money from Americans or whomever. So she took her girls together, those who were Christians, said, let's start praying. We need to pray that God will provide us with the land, which they did. She found a place. 2 years later, her American friend sent her money and said, buy it. And then in the 1890s, so she would have been, 33 at the time, she bought property 36 miles from Pune, which at the time was going through a bubonic plague. I mean, it continued plague. Famine. India was big, but there was a lot going on there. And she established a property called Mukti Mission, M-U-K-T-I. Mukti in the Marathi language, which was what was spoken in the area, means freedom, liberation, or salvation. And she moved the school out there. And they had two divisions, general education and vocational training, because she realized not everybody was brilliant. Not everyone wanted to learn how to read and be a teacher, a doctor, whatever. So she had training for people, mostly girls, but then eventually boys started coming and they could farm. Eventually they had a printing press. Women could learn how to weave. They made all their own clothes. I mean, she had a vocational compound where you could be educated or you could learn a trade that you could use to support yourself later. It was all about emancipating women to lead a full life. Men, too, if they were there. I mean, the boys, because they did run this school. And she had the first kindergarten in India right there at Mukti Mission.
So good. It's so good. And, especially it still is so precarious of what disease is coming through and wiping everybody out. And am I going to live? Is my child going to live? And yet the faith of just getting up each day and doing what's right in front of you. It's just so beautiful.
And India, as you keep mentioning, Michelle, is vast. It is huge with all sorts of different topographies. I think it's the same size as the United States of America. Oh. I mean, it's huge. And so, she's probably, as Michelle was pointing out, looking at it going, 48, women, Christians, just this many educated. We need the whole country to be affected by that, especially since she's traveled it by foot and she speaks these different languages. She's interacted with so many of these different women. Yeah. So what happened next, Michelle?
Well, guess what? 1896, there was a famine.
Yes. Oh.
No, this is not funny at all. This is tragic.
It's not. And it's just the gumption. What's the word?
But, sometimes the Lord uses those things just to say, you need to get in touch with the God who provides. Clearly. You need God,
So it was in the next county over, basically. So she got herself an ox cart and she took a couple helpers and she went to get starving widows and orphans. And she said she found things more terrible than any she had ever seen. The unimaginable suffering, the heart-rending degradation, and the ruthless traffic in little girls.
Oh, yep.
She said even the little children seemed to have lost all their innocence and behaved like little devils. But, what was going on? I mean, it was you were going to die if you didn't do anything. So she gathered as many as she could, and she returned to Mukti and settled down as basically she could. All were miserably dirty, many diseased, suffering from sore heads, sore mouths, and other complaints caused by starvation. Remember, she had seen her family starve to death. She wasn't going to leave people lying there. And she put them to work in her industrial school. Those who were wanted to learn how to read, young enough to be able to read, they had them work in the morning and they went to school in the afternoon. She ended up, in the next year, 73 were baptized, 60 more. I mean, they just continued to go on and on. More famine in 1900, more people. At one point, she had 3,500 people living on her Mukti mission. She just, how can I turn them away?
Wow.
That's the size of a village in those days. I mean, that's huge. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. And got up at 4 for devotion. She eventually had them build a church, a very large church. People would gather with her to pray. It was all about prayer because that was what was keeping them going. In 1905, as she's still overseeing all these people, she felt led to start a prayer circle to pray for the salvation of the souls, Holiness Mission 101. And they rose at 4, all sorts of people to pray. And shortly thereafter, guess what? Revival broke out. So she wasn't content just with education. They needed to know Jesus, and all was well. About the same time, she became convicted that the Bible they had to read from the Indian Bible Mission Society was too high an educational level for the traditional person in the community, those speaking Marathi language, even those who could read. So she decided that someone needed to translate the Bible into Marathi, and why not her? So adding to all the other languages, she added Greek and she added Hebrew. She started a Greek and a Hebrew class at her higher level high school, as the Sarada, because she wanted someone to be able to check her to make sure that she was translating correctly. Of course, the first 3 years she spent putting together a concordance of Marathi, Hebrew, and Greek so she could correctly understand what the words meant. And she had these students helping her with this. And then she spent 15 years translating the Bible into Marathi for the common people.
Wow.
At this point, her daughter was old enough that she had been educated, and she took over the running of the school. All was going, and it was going well. And then...
Michelle, I'm going to stop you there on a cliffhanger because we only have 2 minutes, so we're going to have to go into a part three. And there is nothing that Robin and I like more than a cliffhanger.
Sure.
And I want to stop it there. But I'm thinking, you know, as we're going to wind up this episode, I'm thinking about how her prayers for the women to be educated. And I'm thinking about the women that came after her. I'm thinking of Ida Scudder, who came and started, you know, was a doctor to India. Her father had been a missionary doctor to India.
Yep.
And then Ida came and started a school where she trained nurses and doctors. And then you also have Amy Carmichael, who also, you know, it's interesting that these women, they didn't just come with the gospel, but they both had this sense that we need to bring education to the women of India. And of course, as we know with Amy Carmichael, she also was saving these young children that were being used in prostitution, and she was saving these widows. And so it's that same God heart, that same Jesus heart, you know, working. And you're wondering how much of this came through those prayers. You know, God heard those prayers that she prayed for India, and he put it on the heart, you know. As you probably remember, Ida Scudder did not want to go. She said anywhere but India and anything but being a doctor. And the Lord just narrowed all her choices. And of course, she went to the Philadelphia, the Medical College of Philadelphia for women. And so another one. So you're just seeing, you know, the Lord working in all these things. And I love the way that God not only binds us together in Christ, but he makes East meet West. And it's only through the work of Jesus. So we're going to leave you listeners on that cliffhanger. So she started this school, 3,500 people are living there, and Now, what will happen next in the Pandita Ramadan saga? You do?
Part three to come.
Yes, part three. Okay. And I'll get a correct pronunciation on that one going too.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.